One of the things that is so important is if we can learn to sing each other's songs, you know? That's a good thing. And my face feels all tingly having done that. That must be a good thing as well. My goodness. I'm very much in a similar place as I was last week. I guess I'm giving a talk again, which is not exactly the same, but in kind, similar. And where I was this week was thinking if I could change one thing, you know, if I could change one thing. And I generally go to that kind of idea, casting myself as master of the universe. You know, if I were in charge of the whole unfolding cosmos, more than one thing I would change. Or if I was king of the world, there'd be a lot that I would change. We don't get to do that, though, do we? In reality, we don't ever get to do that. I remember the very first time a child asserted themselves. Maybe I'm thinking I was 10 or 11, and my little sister and her girlfriend, the girl who used to live next door, Annie O'Neill, I walked into the room and I asked the girls to do something, and Annie stood up like kids do in this archetypal response, and she put her hands right up here and said, "You are not the boss of me." And how often we feel like that. There must be something that's hardwired into our DNA that makes us want to put our hands right here and say, "You are not the boss of me. You can't make me do anything." And that's quite a come down, because I guess when you're 10 or 11 and you're feeling pretty good about yourself and the 2-year-old smacks you down, that doesn't feel so good. I had nowhere to go with that. So if I'm not the king of the universe or the world or the boss of the culture, or if I'm really not even the boss of a 2-year-old or anything, what indeed do I get to do? Well, we have some guidance with a thing called the Serenity Prayer. There are a couple of really snappy versions floating around right now that we're several generations into it. My two favorite ones are, before we say the real one, is "God grant me enough wine to accept the things I cannot change and enough coffee to change the things I can." That's my very favorite one right now. The other one I like is "God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to hide the bodies of the people I had to rub out because they pissed me off." That's very useful at times. But the real one is, "God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference." Well, for those of us, many of us are in 12-step programs of one kind or another, or have been over the last several decades. And we understand that to mean, "God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change." That's you. That's everything. That's everybody. At long last, I do not have the power or the authority to insist on or inflict change on anybody. But pray that I might have the courage to change the things that I can, and guess what that would be? Me. And we often talk all about accepting the things that we cannot change, but we rarely talk about the courage to change the things that we can. And so that's something that we get to do and get to focus on. What is it in you that you would like to change? Well, the snappy answer is, well, you know, my life is in the toilet. I'm such a mess. There's so many things. Where do I begin with this nightmare I call my life? And that's fun for a moment, And, you know, then there's a wiser part of you that says, thank you for being so entertaining. And how much closer are you to the solution? Well, not at all, but the laugh feels good. So we might keep up that routine for 10, 20, 40 years, I don't know. Until we find ourselves at the same place over and over and over again. Until it becomes so boring for us. Really boring. There's an old church expression that we never change when we see the light, we only change when we feel the heat. But we only take on the work of transformation, I think, when we get worn down and are so bored with the smallness of our life. We'll move when we feel the heat, when things are too uncomfortable. We'll take some action. But that's because it is unbearable. Our immediate environment has become hostile towards us, so we go something, we do something, we make some kind of cosmetic change, but the work of transformation is interior. And I can only speak from my own experience, of course, right? But when we become so bored with the averageness of things is when we take on the work of real transformation, and man, that's work. There ain't no heavy lifting, but it's dedicated work. And so we seek out something and we come to a place such as this. Jairam, praise God that the perennial teachings exist and are being taught at places like this and in other idioms, other expressions, in other venues for sure. But the truth is that you are cause to your experience, and yet there is some greater good out there that is willing to respond in a different way if you put your whole heart into it. I think there are two in the Old Testament. There are two versions of the Ten Commandments. Somebody tell me if there are more. I know there are at least two. And one of the ones that we do not visit that much is that the first commandment is that you will love the Lord your God with your whole heart and your whole mind and your whole soul. That's very compelling stuff because that's a big demand on consciousness. It's putting everything we have into some act of creation, some act of self-givingness, from us, knowing as we understand it now that to the degree that we give of ourselves, we have a lively expectation of the world of life echoing back to us, some equivalent of that. So the question is always going to be the same. What is it that you would like to give your whole mind and your whole heart and your whole soul to so that you might have an extraordinary experience of life? Sometimes it's going to be addressing an immediate need, absolutely, right? A physical healing, a healing in a relationship, a new expression of right work, something immediate. But that's like very often moving when you feel the heat. Something has been done unto us. We have been fired, we have been dumped. We may have unfortunately had an accident and are not 100% well. That's an outside force. But are we clear on what it is we would like to give our life to? And how we want to do it? And what that looks like? I always encourage people, you know, when we talk about being of service, I say, please do not feel in an old-fashioned, burnt-out hippie kind of way that you need to give yourself to something because, well, I should do something about rescuing babies. I should give yourself to something that really makes you feel alive on the planet. A great quote going around, who knows in reality who these things are attributed to anymore. But, you know, the world doesn't need successful people. The world needs happy people. Happy people. Happy with who I am. Happy with what I aspire to, because it promotes my own wholeness and my eager and active and constructive participation in the larger community. I was thinking of Reverend Keith Cox is here today, I notice, and I was thinking about him as I wrote the August newsletter, because he is somebody that identified a kind of happiness for him, which, you know, it might be intimidating. This is somebody that gets on a plane and goes to Africa and builds schools every year. How many have you built, Keith, now? 20 schools. Now, there's a part of all of us that goes, oh my God, he's built 20 schools in Africa? Oh God, I can't even keep my bathroom clean. Don't ask me to show up for life like that. Nobody is. Don't compare yourself to anybody or anything. But obviously it gives life to Reverend Keith, and that's why he does it. There can't possibly be a should in there, because I can guarantee you that he would have been burnt out by school number 3 if it was something he thought he should do to be a nice guy on the planet. Well, what is it that you want to do? I don't know. Take your time and make a claim in consciousness, though. You've got to. And maybe if you go through life without it, maybe that's okay. You know, maybe we do get another chance. Who knows how these things unfold? But I do know that this is an opportunity. I really got this after thinking about this really specifically and consciously for 25 years and reading God knows how many books about the purpose of life. Who knows? Who cares? I don't know. You know, what if the purpose of my life was only to have taken this one rescue cat that I have, and I get to the other side and I find out, well, that was the purpose of your life. You might feel ripped off. That was a lot of effort just for the cat. I wish somebody had told me that in the beginning. You don't know, but my God, what an opportunity this is. To be here with these gifts and these powers that we have. I went to see a production of Cherry Orchard, which was not the best. but it's such a great play. And, you know, there's a line in this play where the guy who supposedly is sort of vulgar, nouveau riche guy, says, oh my God, well, all these resources around us that have been given us with these trees and these great rivers and this beautiful land, by rights, we should feel like giants. Like giants in this world. Well, and you are. You are. But unless we really attach ourselves to a thing, the opportunity will not be fully grasped. And will not be fully utilized. So your homework, this is not quite the end, but your homework, every minute of the day is to remember that which your life is devoted to. And forsake all other distractions. Keep finding ways to come back to center. To know this is who I am, This is what I do. This is my skill. This is my joy. This is my gift. And this is what I give. Your wholeness will be felt and known and experienced and expressed. And this is what we know as the fullness of life. All notions of success are what it's supposed to look like. Who knows? All I know is that you have every right, that once we are truly in sync with what we want to do, how we want to take advantage of this opportunity, we have every right to expect life to give us what we need to accomplish that and to experience that. That's what a life lived according to spiritual practice understands. There's more than enough. To consider what it is that you want to be busy doing, or not even busy doing, doing on your own schedule, doing in the way that you want to do it. To consider that, again, there's two components, because for everything that is manifest in this world, there is a yin and a yang. There's an interior and an exterior. There's a female energy and a male energy about it for all things. And so even in metta, physics, there's going to be some equivalent to it. So what is it I am thinking? Always. What am I thinking? In our thought exchange class, we're working with this idea. If my life is mirroring back to me what I'm thinking, good Lord, what am I thinking? What part of this am I responsible for? And as a way of working life, the answer is most of it. Not 100%. I'm not a teacher that says 100%. But a lot, most of it. Yeah. Well, if most of your life is not okay, then we got to reset, refocus, and really make a claim on your own consciousness, your own pattern of thinking. What are the predominant ideas, or the predominant idea? Dr. Walker's work was based on the idea is that you are enough. If you do not have enough in your life, you are clearly, one is, humanity does think, I am not enough, or I am not worthy. Start there. To know that I am enough for what is the next piece. I am enough to accomplish this, to experience this, to create this, and then be in service to that. This yin-yang, that's the yang part. That's the impressing the idea into the universe. But there's a yin part, a part that is in the void, a part that may not be known, and that might take shape in the ways we are resisting it that we're not aware of. So what are you thinking? And uncover the ways you might be resisting your good. There are ways we do this. We all do this. It is human nature to go, yeah, I'm okay with a great job. Yeah, who doesn't want a great place to live? Well, why don't you have one? Whatever your tradition is. Through my fault? I don't know. We all have them, right? Unearthing the ways we resist our good might be important work. And maybe you don't have to go back and look at all the painful experiences of your life. You know, there isn't enough time left for that. But say, you know what? Obviously, if it's not in my world, it's because I have been resistant to it. Obviously. there has been something in me that has been resistant. Can I get along without that resistance? Am I willing to let that go, whatever it is, whatever you call it? As Glinda says to the wicked witch, "Be gone, you have no power here. Be gone." Okay. That's the work. This is simple, yes? It ain't easy. And it takes all of us. This is what we talk about with fellowship and support and community. It takes all of us to keep encouraging each other because it's so worth it. It's so worth it. How can it not be? Whatever it is, there are two fantastically huge trees, if you park in the back parking lot there. There's a huge lemon tree and a huge avocado tree. And they are so abundant every year. They're dangerous. They really are. There is so much biological matter in that parking lot back there when they come to full fruition every year. And you know what? They're just giving it away. There's plenty more where that came from. Take this yield. I'll even drop it in a parking lot. I don't care, says the avocado tree. Plenty more. Plenty more. If you're part of nature, how can that not be your nature too, right? Take time. Take time to understand what you're really thinking and how you might be resisting the appearance of that. That's the great work that you get to do. As it says in the Desiderata, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. And it doesn't need any support from me. Galaxies far away know exactly what they're doing, and they don't need a boss. There is a principle that prospers the cosmos. There's a principle of life that understands how to prosper this very planet. What is the principle that you want to work, forgetting everybody else's issues? Everybody else. How do you want to use that principle, and how do you want to prosper your life? That's the great work that we get to do, and that we get to talk about it and do it together makes me a very grateful person. Thank you, friends. I really appreciate you.